You're going to hear that discussed. The informant who had infiltrated the group in 1993. You got to hear it for yourself. That's going to be available on both Michelle's website and at expertwitnessradio.org. And having said that, Laura Cavanaugh, honey, you know, baby, I'm on my way home. And God, I love you. And I love all you guys. That's why I'm here.
One, two, three, four.
Yeah, and in case you don't speak punk, that's WBAI New York. It's 8 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook. Everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Mayor Goldstein here with you. Mike over on the other side of the room.
Yes.
And Claude down the hall.
Hi.
How you doing? Speak up.
Okay.
Well, what's going on?
I learned how to use microphones.
Yeah, they're very handy, especially in radio stations. We're not fundraising. We want to thank everybody who called in last week during our five-hour stretch. And boy, you know, I think 5 hours is more than enough Off the Hook for anybody, including us. But we did quite well. Combined with Enough Said, we raised a total of over $5,000, I believe.
Not $50,000.
No, I was going to say something, but obviously it doesn't work. $5,000, I think. I was going to say something stupid like that. But no, more than $5,000, so that's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
$5,000 an hour. So thanks, everybody, who pledged. And now the second part of that is to pay the pledge, and hopefully everybody will do that as well. And a lot of people always write to us, hearing the show afterwards, wanting to know if they can pledge. Well, you can always pledge to BAI. I'm not quite sure how the premium situation works. But if you're interested in pledging, give us a call during the business day, 212-209-2800. And I'm sure somebody will be happy to take your money, whatever way you wish to give it.
Or just send a check. I'm sure they'll cash it.
It'll wind up being cash somehow, you know, in some way. Those of you who pledged for the last fundraiser and wondering just where the hell your premiums are, we have the magical pieces of paper we need now. We had gotten a list of everybody who pledged, but we needed a list of everybody who paid, obviously, because we don't want to be sending premiums to people who pledged and didn't pay. It doesn't work that way. So if you were wondering where that was, it's now in our hands, and any further delay can't be blamed on the radio station. Okay, we have a few interesting updates and some letters, and of course we'll try to take phone calls because we haven't taken phone calls in a few weeks. H2K2, the planning is continuing, and we should have a speaker list by next show, and maybe later this week, or if not later this week, early next week. And the names just keep piling in. It's really going to be spectacular, I think. We already have as many panels and speakers as we did last time. Of course, we want to have more because we have more space. And there is still room if people are interested in participating. And they can send an email over to speakers@h2k2.net. And be as detailed as possible as to what you are proposing to do. If you want to give a talk, if you have an idea for a panel, if you have a particular field of expertise that you'd like to share with the audience. And what an audience is going to be. It's our fourth conference of that sort. We've had them in 1994, 1997, and 2000. And we expect thousands of people to show up from all around the planet. Hence the name, Hackers on Planet Earth. Actually, one person sent us a letter, which I think is worthy of being noticed here. because this person is planning on coming to H2K2 and apparently going through quite an ordeal to do so. I plan to try and get out to New York for H2K2 in July. Only one problem, I am graduating from my degree. I'm not sure quite what that means. I guess it's graduating with your degree. It's a different way of saying it. On Friday the 12th. As you may know, the conference runs from Friday, July 12th to Sunday, July 14th. So if I am to make it for the convention, a mammoth operation is to be undertaken. I will attend my graduation, then the graduation ball that evening slash night, leave early Saturday morning in what state I cannot say, catch a train to London at 5:45 a.m., so you know where this person is, then catch a plane to New York at 11 a.m.-ish, and by the miracles of time difference, arrive not long after midday. Then, taxi from JFK and arrive at H2K2 for 36 hours of convention fun, staying in New York until Monday morning to fly back, try and catch some sleep, lose jet lag, and be back at work on Tuesday morning, with hopefully no one being the wiser. Kind of commitment is something that is to be admired, I think, and I hope lots of people realize the priority that this has in people's lives. Yes, you know, I've heard the wedding excuse lots of times. Oh, my sister's getting married on Saturday. Okay, you know, fine, you can duck away for a couple hours, I suppose, and witness that. But you know, weddings happen all the time. H2K2 is only going to happen once.
Should take the A train.
What about the A train?
Rather than a cab.
Oh, yeah, that's a handy tip. If you're coming from JFK Airport, you can take a... Well, of course, you have lots of luggage. In fact, he probably doesn't have lots of luggage if he's coming for 3 days. But you can get a free bus to the Howard Beach subway station. From there, take the A train, and you should be here by sundown. Other airports have similar types of ease of travel. Newark is the most recently converted. You can actually catch a train from Newark now and take it all the way to Penn Station, which I think is pretty cool.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure exactly what you have to do, but I'm told that everybody there knows.
We will be publishing a guide to traveling in New York some point.
Both online, and we'll be handing it out to people as they
come. Well, by then it's a little late.
Well, if they want to see the city and things like that, there'll be a slight little guide there. But yeah, online at h2k.net we'll have more information as well. Okay, that's the H2K2 blurb there. Again, speakers at h2k2.net. And if you want to volunteer, volunteers at h2k2.net to take part in the conference in that way. Did you see the website, whitehouse.org/homeland? Yeah. We've gotten a few hundred pieces of email on this saying that someone hacked the White House. Well, not quite. White House, www.whitehouse.org is not the White House, but they're a site that calls themselves the White House. It's something known as parody that we used to understand in this country, and now I'm sure that these people are having all kinds of legal threats thrown at them because middle America is getting confused, or threatens to get confused, or something like that.
So they don't realize the White House is part of their government.
Well, I think they realize the White House is part of the government, but they might think that whitehouse.org is part of the government, which it is not. And if you read the webpage, it becomes pretty apparent. For instance, would the White House say, under United States Office of Homeland Security, under safety tips, be vigilant, the enemy is all around. No, they would say that, but it gets better. Americans observing any of the following are hereby commanded to contact the FBI immediately.
So sounds like it's written by Ashcroft.
So far, no different.
Do they give him a phone number?
No phone number. You're supposed to know these things. So anyway, if you observe any of the following, you're commanded to contact the FBI. Brown-skinned persons conversing in heated gibberish. Turban-wearing persons demonstrating emotions other than all-American bliss and contentment. Sidewalk falafel vendors of ambiguous ethnicity who are unwilling to make change for a 50. Arabic store owners or cab drivers who have not begun prominently displaying at least 3 American flags. Middle Eastern persons who become visibly uncomfortable and or upset when confronted with your suspicious and hostile stares. Burqa-clad transvestites, and any and all individuals not gushing boundless praise for the current administration. I guess there are some people who would believe that that was real.
You know, somebody may have just started listening. What's the name of that website?
This is www.whitehouse.org/homeland for the Homeland Security section. I imagine whitehouse.org has all kinds of other sections as well, but that's the one here that I think is particularly well done. There's all kinds of notices here. Federal agents have commenced mandatory tattooing in communities across America. Click here for important information on how to receive your patriotism-affirming mark. And, of course, the important notice about foreign car buying. Like their deranged international brethren, U.S.-based terrorists aren't partial to American cars. As such, every foreign car buyer in the United States is not above the shadows of suspicion. So keep your eyes open for that. Don't laugh. It's closer than you think. Any terrorist related activities?
Is that this website has their own color, set of colors.
Oh, you know, it didn't say anything about the colors.
How good are they then?
It might have been in color, though, for all I know.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But the color is still yellow, despite all the terrorist activity that was supposed to take place this past weekend, which never happened. Goes to show, you can't rely on terrorists to keep an appointment with anything. What I don't understand, though, is all of this supposed new alertness that we were supposed to be heeding comes because somebody who was probably being tortured in Cuba said, oh, yeah, by the way, they're going to blow up the Statue of Liberty on Memorial Day, you know, and how is this person exactly going to get this information being in detention, you know, for several months? It's, you know, questions that don't ever get answered. Questions that people should ask. I mean, you know, asking the question is I think, a healthy sign. All right, let's see what other things we can ask questions about. Well, how about this? Airbus, the European jet manufacturer, is planning to build concealed cameras into the light fittings above the seats in its aircraft. The idea is to let the crew monitor passengers and spot hijackers before they strike. The camera also works in the dark. I guess hijackers have that kind of look in their eyes when they're sitting in their seats, you know. I mean, why not install the cameras in the terminal? Wouldn't it catch their particular expression then before they board the aircraft?
You could even put people in the terminal.
Yeah, you could do that. The crazy thing is, all these things that they're installing and putting in, and I've heard this many, many times, but nobody ever seems to, you know, take it seriously, but none of these would have prevented what happened on September 11th. Not a single thing that they are proposing, you know?
Yeah, I get the feeling that they're... For their lack of attention in September 2001,
mm-hmm.
they're trying to make the whole country do the vigilance for them.
Well, now they're going berserk. I mean, you know, a couple of people have accused Bush of you know, missing the boat on some warnings. So now, to get even, they're going to simply notify every time somebody calls in a threat someplace, and the whole city's going to go on alert. So that they can say, see, this is what we can do. You know, this is, if you don't trust our judgment, then we'll just have to tell you everything and you'll go crazy.
It's becoming very quickly like car alarms.
Very good analogy. So, yeah, cameras on airplanes, cameras everywhere, people watching out, people being alert. You know, there's something, and this might be a stupid question. Maybe somebody can help me with this. But you know how they always release the pictures of all the hijackers? You know, you see these people. How do they know that they were the hijackers? Mm-hmm. That's something I've never gotten an answer to. Was it revealed someplace that these were definitely the people? Because, you know, were they even on the passenger list? I'm sorry?
There was originally a mistake.
There was.
They put a picture of someone who was still alive.
Yeah, he objected to that. And he said, stop putting my picture up there because I'm still here and I'm getting all kinds of phone calls now. What I want to know, though, is were these people's names on the passenger list? And, okay, you have that information. How do you know that those are the people that stood up and hijacked the airplanes? I mean, I hear all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories about, you know, various other scenarios. There's a lot of speculation that the plane over Pennsylvania was shot down because pieces of it were found miles away from where it actually came down. And there's speculation that the whole thing, I think a book came out recently in France saying that the whole thing was simply a staged event by the U.S. government. How far you want to believe certain conspiracy theories is up to you, but I think everybody should be asking questions. And when you see something that is presented to you and not backed up with fact, such as an Osama bin Laden tape that allegedly says things that you don't really hear the translation to, I think it's our responsibility to ask questions. And it's funny how people get angry when you ask questions. It's a very similar world to the world of hacking, because when you ask a lot of questions, that is, you know, try a lot of different things, people get angry, especially the people in control, because you're one step closer to proving how little control they really have.
With the critical difference that we in the hacker community tend not to kill thousands of people.
No. Although you'd never know it from the way certain people like to lock up all the hackers and treat them as terrorists and criminals. Well, you can find out all kinds of things and more at the conference, because I'm sure that will be a subject of great debate. Okay, let's look at some more news stories. In an effort to stamp out digital TV piracy, the Broadcast Protection Discussion Group, which includes various technology companies, consumer electronics manufacturers, and Hollywood studios, released a draft proposal two Saturdays ago, calling for devices such as computers and TV sets that receive digital TV broadcasts to be equipped with approved anti-piracy technology. Once that proposal is finalized, likely sometime later this month, another group will work on a way to ensure that the manufacturers of such devices will install the technology in their products. Critics claim that such action will slow down innovation and violate the rights of consumers. For example, one approved anti-piracy technology would cause DVD recorders to scramble digital TV programs, making them unplayable on tens of millions of DVD players already owned by consumers. DigitalConsumer.org and Excite.com founder Joe Krause notes that the assumption that all online retransmissions of digital TV programs rather than just those that infringe on copyrights must be halted is problematic. His group wants a fair use exemption to be instituted, but distinguishing between fair use and piracy is a virtually impossible task for protection technologies. These are perilous times. Fair use really is endangered because of the scare over piracy. And I shudder to think what lies ahead. Shuddering right now. We have some good news. The recording industry, from artists to major labels, joined on Thursday in a rare show of unity to demand tougher laws barring what they called payola-like promotion of music played on the radio. They also called for a sweeping government review of radio industry consolidation. Deregulation of the radio business and rampant practices that skirt 40-year-old anti-payola laws stifle competition, drive up music promotional costs, and make it harder for new artists to gain attention. That's according to the artists and the record labels, saying this in a joint statement. The RIAA is actually on the same side of this. The statement was endorsed by a broad coalition of trade groups led by the powerful Recording Industry Association of America, which represents major music companies, along with several talent unions and the Grammy-sponsoring National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. But a spokeswoman for the nation's biggest radio station group, Clear Channel Communications, Inc., which was singled out for criticism in the letter, dismissed the RIAA's complaints as absurd. She insisted that decisions about airplay are driven strictly by research showing what the public wants to hear. How do they find out what the public wants to hear? I'd like to know that. Federal law bars radio stations from accepting payments in exchange for playing particular songs on the airwaves, a practice known as payola, unless that information is disclosed to listeners. Well, that's interesting. You can engage in payola as long as you tell your listeners. That's kind of interesting little addendum to that law. Anyway, as we've mentioned here on this radio program many times, Clear Channel owns 1,225 radio stations nationwide.
We've never mentioned that before because they've probably bought several dozen more since we last gave a number.
Yeah, we said more than 1,000, but I guess this is kind of an exact number. As of the date of this story, which was a few days ago, so it's probably more than that by now. They don't see how owning so many radio stations gives them an unfair advantage, but I don't know. I think it's open to debate. My goodness. And here's a letter we got from somebody that's related to this. Recently, I was walking through Potomac Mills Mall, a local shopping mall, and the biggest tourist trap in this state, when I noticed in small print on one of the plastic displays with a map and random advertisements in small lettering, a Clear Channel mall. Is owning thousands of radio stations and concert venues just not enough for them? Apparently not. They own malls now. That's right, concert venues, too. That's one of the reasons why the recording industry is so upset, because these guys get to pick and choose. If someone does a concert and uses Clear Channel promotions, well, guess what? They'll get played on Clear Channel radio stations. It's amazing how these things work. Okay, and let's go to a couple letters, and we'll take some phone calls at 212-209-2900. Oh, this is a public service announcement that actually I think we should give to people, because they sent this to us with the intention of us telling it to other people. So I think the best thing to do is simply to tell other people. Right?
Let's do that.
Public service. My name is Tony Moxham. I'm the art director of Interview Magazine in New York. I wanted to contact you because I'm researching subjects for a project we're working on with Levi's Red Label. For the launch of Levi's new Red Label, we are creating a very special photo story based around the idea that causes need rebels. And to that effect, I was wondering if you knew of any rebellious, revolutionary, otherwise groundbreaking hackers that might be interested in being photographed alongside rebels from other areas such as music, movies, the arts, sciences, etc. Do we know people like this?
That work for Levi's?
No. They don't have to work for Levi's. They're basically hackers that want to look like rebels or that want to, you know, be in photographs for advertising Levi's jeans.
We know someone called Rebel.
Yeah. Why don't we send him their way? Anyway, anyone interested in this is encouraged to email. let's see. What's the email address here? Okay, I guess this is a Hotmail account. T-Moxham, T-M-O-X-H-A-M, at hotmail.com. Personally, I don't know anybody who would call themselves a hacker and appear in a Levi's ad at the same time, but who knows? Who knows what kind of people are out there?
Be sure to ask them about their labor practices in the third world.
Yeah, do that. And get back to us, because we want to know about that as well.
Also, if you talk to this guy... ask if their magazine has a refunds department, because I actually purchased a copy of this magazine to see what he was all about, and I want my money back.
You purchased what magazine? Interview?
Interview Magazine.
Is that the magazine you just handed me?
Yes.
Oh, that's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yes.
Hand me the magazine again. You said it was the worst. You walked in here independently,
yes.
And you said it was, what, the worst? How much money?
It was only $3.
The worst $3 you had ever spent in your life. And this was before you even saw this letter.
No, it was after I saw this letter.
Oh. Oh, that's right. I sent it to a bunch of people. Okay. So you bought the magazine after seeing... All right.
Yes, there's
it's
people
not that much of a coincidence.
Colored hairs on their head.
A girl with pinkish hair and a... Is that a guy or another girl? I can't really tell.
It's a guy.
Okay. With bluish hair. And the word interview is scrawled across their heads. Exclusive and outrageous, Kelly and Jack Osbourne, the super hot stars of TV's Wildest Family, spill it all. As do their parents. Okay, I'm confused. Is it Interview Magazine or is it Levi's that this guy is working for?
I think some hard combination of the two.
Uh-huh. Okay, whatever. We spent more than enough time on this, so people have the information if they want it. Okay, this person is confused. I'm listening to the archive of Tuesday's multi-hour-long show, wanting to make sure I understand this clearly. It's okay for people to reproduce the movie and offer it for viewing and or download online. You don't mind? Yes, that's clear. How clear can we make it? We don't mind. We made the film so people could see it. And anything to do to help people see it, such as showing it to your class, broadcasting it over public access TV, displaying it on a big wall in your neighborhood that everybody can see as they drive by on the interstate. Whatever it takes, as long as you don't change it, as long as you don't take credit for it, as long as you don't sell it. Those are the only conditions I think that apply. I guess, you know, not very many filmmakers feel that way. I know a lot of independent filmmakers do, but we're not going to sue you for redistributing anything. But of course, you know, people that want to support the cause, please buy the videotape from us. That would be very nice. Helps us, you know, pay for it. Okay, this person says Freedom Downtime was great. My situation is that I've been a listener for about 3 years, and I've been away at college and not near a city where there was a 2600 meeting. But I just got a federal IT job. Do you think I would be received negatively because of my employment? Hopefully Uncle Sam won't have a problem with it, but I'll handle that issue soon enough. Any thoughts on this would be great. Well, I can't speak for Uncle Sam, but I can say that you'd be welcome at any 2600 meeting, regardless of who you work for, just as long as you're upfront about it. You know, there's all kinds of things that we can learn from each other. And just as people from all different backgrounds welcome at the conference, the same thing holds true at the meetings and in the hacker world in general, because... we're all here to share information and learn. That's what it's all about. And people you think are on the same side aren't always on the same side. People you think are on other sides aren't always on other sides either. Okay, you ready for a story of intrigue and mystery and things like that? This is from an insider, an alleged insider. Hello, I am a script reader in Los Angeles. My friend told me about your radio show and how your magazine is being sued under the DMCA. I wanted to relay something I heard and see if you knew anything about it. What I have discovered is amazing. There is a fight between Hollywood and Silicon Valley regarding movie and music piracy. Most of Hollywood is pushing laws like the Consumer Broadband and Digital Television Protection Act, known as the CBDPTA/Hollings Bill, to try to require the tech industry to prevent this theft. Although there is a faction within Hollywood attempting to circumvent everyone's plans, instead of putting piracy detection devices, digital cops, within PCs, set-top boxes, and media peripherals, there's a much more sinister concept. An unknown Hollywood-backed company is developing products. This is reading like a TV script, isn't it? An unknown Hollywood-backed company is developing products based on a new technology called Quantum Harmony. QH, Quantum Harmony. You can see sort of a chill go out over the nation as we say these words for the first time. The most notable is a wireless broadband transmitter that can transmit copious amounts of data in the range of hundreds of miles continuously for inexpensive costs. Because of the QH technology, the transmission is virtually undetectable by any traditional RF device. The QH transmitter won't interfere with any other transmissions. It is unknown what frequency it operates at. One source told me it uses multiple frequencies, which seems to be spread spectrum. A Hollywood studio is currently in pre-production of a movie based on Quantum Harmony in a ploy to basically convince America how good it is. The story behind the movie is rather intriguing about the possibilities of the QH technology and the methods used to develop it. This particular studio's concept is to eliminate fair use entirely by not ever actually selling you the content, but rather perpetually renting you it. Using inexpensive QH-based chips, they will always stream the content to you wirelessly on demand. Every time you listen to music or watch a movie, they will know because they are transmitting it to you and authorizing your use each time. All the while building a database of what you watch and potentially charging you for it each time. There will be no buffering, delay, or any discernible difference between playing a DVD and watching one wirelessly. It is instantaneous. In fact, it is purportedly so fast that the only thing that slows it down is the hardware to process it. A source said an initial test of a 100-mile radius put the bit rate in the gigabit range, but it might as well be yottabits per second. Is that a word?
It is now.
Yottabits. Not Yoda, as in Star Wars.
Double T?
Double T, yes.
You know, I've seen it?
It's
an enormous number. It's like 10 to the 24th. I don't remember. It's a very big number.
Yottabits. Yottabits.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
It's real.
All right, might as well be yottabits per second because there is no digital content large enough to slow it down. The movie about Quantum Harmony is shrouded in ultra secrecy. This is the movie. I guess the real Quantum Harmony is also shrouded in ultra secrecy. It is an internal project, so there probably won't be any confirmation of it until 4 months before the movie opens. The studio behind it is most likely either Warner Brothers or Sony Pictures due to their connection with the tech industry through their parent companies and their lack of support for the Hollings Bill / CBDTPA. Most say it isn't Disney or Fox because they already have engineers working on piracy detection devices for CBDTPA. This is weird. I mean, both sides are bad here. You know, it's really evil. Hang on. Have you heard of any of the above, or do you have any information on it? It seems traditional mass media has blacklisted anything related to Quantum Harmony due to their suspicious ties to the Hollywood studio producing it. Who wish to keep it quiet until the movie and technology is completed. I won't read the person's name because this is so completely secretive that they might find you. Even though your name is very common, they might track you down. You're looking at this with a degree of skepticism, Mike.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good. It's good to have a healthy dose of skepticism. But
no, the yottabit thing is it really is. It's way beyond 10 to the 24th. It's an enormous
number. Well, the fact that this person was able to say that word.
The sound.
That boosted, in my opinion.
The sounds too much like a
Hollywood
script for me to believe that it's anything else.
Yeah, but couldn't Hollywood scripts be sort of tested on the public to see, you know, sort of as a news poll to see if they would accept certain ideas, you know, and then one day all of a sudden it becomes reality?
It's always possible.
You know, life imitating art. It's happened before. All right. Well, let's move on. We got a lot of mail about the neighborhood. Remember that the MCI neighborhood thing that we investigated, where I think for $49 a month you get unlimited long distance and local costs. Well, a couple of people have raised suspicions about it. They say, first of all, perhaps the catch is that they don't guarantee to leave the price at $49 a month. They can raise it at any time, or maybe even after a year. Other people, though, have said that this is only intended for voice service. Yeah, and as an additional fee, if you stay connected to the internet in excess of 5,000 minutes a month for 3 months. So that's something they didn't tell us when we called them. If the 5,000 minute per month for 3 months is exceeded, you'll be assessed an additional monthly charge of $50 for internet data use or be moved to a different product. That's according to somebody who spoke to MCI about that. So, yeah, there's always a catch of some sort. Of course, I don't know if that's a big enough catch for this to be something people wouldn't want to get. Then again, you know, look at your phone bill. See if you spend more than $50 a month every month on long distance. If you spend, like, you know, $10 one month and $60 another, then, you know, obviously it doesn't pay off. So, also, if you have more than one phone line and you share over those phone lines, again, you could wind up paying more through a deal like this. I've also gotten a lot of mail about the Sprint PCS caller ID situation, which I guess extends beyond just Sprint PCS and goes to almost any wireless phone. On Off the Hook recently, a listener stated you can get a Sprint customer's name and number when they call your caller ID. It probably varies in different areas. I know we don't get it here. At least I don't get it. But in Salt Lake City, on my Sprint PCS phone, as well as others I know, it does show your first and last name on caller ID with each call. Along the lines of caller ID, if you speak with the right rep at your phone company, they will often change the name that shows up on caller ID. You say something like, my legal name is this, but no one calls me that. Can you please make it so my nickname shows up on caller ID so that my friends will know it's me? Two of my friends did this. When they called me, one would say Stinky, and my other friend said Rump Shaker Muff. Yeah, okay, well, that letter comes from Parker Lewis. Thank you very much for that. But yeah, I've seen that. I've seen weird names show up in caller ID, names that are not the billing name, names that are not the the listed name. So yeah, it is possible to change. It's another field. You have to talk to the right person and somehow get them to change that, and you can have all kinds of bizarre names show up. All right. This person writes, the whole concept of equating skipping commercials as theft is ludicrous, and my mom understands. With the whole DVD DECSS mess, one has to go to great lengths to explain to the layman that the copy protection the MPAA speaks of isn't, that it's playback protection, and that there shouldn't be anything illegal about watching legally purchased DVDs through operating systems such as Linux. By this time, even if I'm not trying to make this issue clear for my mom, I've lost most people I've tried to explain this to. Wherein lies the success thus far of the MPAA's war on content control? They've managed to obfuscate the whole concept of stealing, copying, and piracy. But where they have succeeded in the DVD case, they stand to lose blatantly in the skipping commercials case. Everyone has a clear experiential concept of what thievery is. You go back to your bike and it isn't there where you left it. It's been stolen. Someone grabs your purse, you never see it again, and you have to cancel your credit cards. This concept of theft and loss is very clear to the average citizen. One certainly doesn't have to own any type of technology to experience the loss of theft. Now we have the corporate giants of this country attempting to tell us that our bike, wallet, car being stolen is the same thing as us not watching commercials. There is no translation necessary for this bit of propaganda. I don't need to translate technical concepts as playback protection versus copy protection to those who don't know what an application on their computer is. Where the MPAA has succeeded in their marketing campaign of turning the whole DVD, the ECSS, debacle into one of the artists versus the pirates, they don't have a chance in hell in obfuscating and deluding the general public into believing the passive behavior of not watching a commercial is the same thing as theft. What I'm concerned about is with the coming of digital television and the soon-to-be ubiquitous PVRs, personal video recorders, we will no doubt see attempts by the media giants to differentiate between the TV show and the TV commercial. Notably absent from the current generation of PVRs is the ability to skip commercials, a trivial technical feat. But of course, we can fast forward through the commercials, but with the advent of digital TV, we could see legislative mandates making it illegal to build a PVR capable of fast forwarding through them. And from groupthink. And yeah, it raises a lot of very interesting questions. I have a PVR. It's known as TiVo. And I know a lot of people out there use TiVo. It's open source technology. People tend to be happy with it. But the other day I got something. I got a message on my TiVo that I had a free program. A Sheryl Crow concert had suddenly been recorded onto my TiVo machine at absolutely no request by me. And I've also been reading recently of events in England where the BBC has managed to get TiVo machines to record a certain program that wasn't being watched by very many people so that everybody would have it, even though they didn't request it. And furthermore, supposedly there are settings that allow certain programs not to be deletable. In other words, you can't delete them for a certain amount of time, for maybe a week or two, or maybe longer, depending on the setting. This is starting to turn into something that's not so good, especially when things are being shoved down your throat, when you're not able to not watch certain things, not skip commercials, perhaps. I've had a lot of good experiences with TiVo, and I know a lot of other people have, but this is something that I think we have to look at very carefully. Imagine certain things just magically appearing on your TV set that you don't want, but you have to have them there. You know, it's you can't erase them. They're mandatory.
Here's what you can do.
You're going to say something like, just turn off your TV, right?
I'm very predictable.
This is how we get into situations like this. The intelligent people turn off the TV. They turn off the TV set and walk away, and then look what happens to the TV industry. It completely falls apart and turns into this dictatorial regime where people who don't know any better just are basically fed this information that they don't see any alternative to it. If you stick around, though, and try to make it a better environment, it's like anything else, you know? It's like the people that are told to love it or leave it, and they choose to stick around and fight, you know?
But it seems like they're compelling you to own their product.
Mm-hmm.
They're forbidding you to erase their product. When did it's? I didn't see the movie. Maybe you did. The Clockwork Orange.
Oh, yeah.
Where they compel the prisoner to watch the product.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems it's a direction they're moving.
Yeah, and we have to pay attention every step of the way. And the only way to do that is to have the technology, to play with the technology, to make it do things, you know, in ways that will benefit your life. I have also an SVHS regular VCR. And I noticed I had a feature the other day that I'd never used before where it marks commercials. It when it finishes, it takes a long time to do this, but it marks commercials. And when you play it back, it is amazing. It totally skips every single commercial and cues it up to the second back to when the program starts. It takes away all the frustration of having to deal with commercials. Turns a regular commercial break into something like 7 seconds of fast forward. What I want to know is how in the world does it know where the commercials are? Do the networks actually send out a signal saying, hey, this is a commercial, now it's time to start skipping? I don't really see how the technology works, but it's incredible. And it's proof that you know, certain things can be designed in advantageous ways. I'm sure they're going to try to stifle that as well. All right, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. If you have any observations, suggestions, or predictable responses, that's our phone number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to mention something, but before I do, I'd just like to mention about the terrorist warnings.
Rebel, do you know about the Levi's ad that
I just emailed
saying?
Them,
Oh, you did email them. Okay, good, because we think that you'd be perfect for that. I think the world needs to see this.
Did you notice that every time the FBI has a warning or the government has a warning that says there's a terrorist warning, the terrorists are going to go here or there,
mm-hmm.
there's another book that comes out in Barnes & Noble?
That's a pretty fast writer.
yeah. Well, who do you think's making this terrorist warning? Not the terrorists. Maybe it's Barnes & Noble that's doing this.
Well, that's an interesting theory, and one that I'm sure will be pursued by the Barnes & Noble legal department in weeks to come.
But it's a good lead for the FBI.
Yeah, thanks for putting us in that position. Good evening. You're on the air. Okay, it's more intelligent, but not quite where I want yet. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Speak up, please.
Hello, hi.
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for this program. I wanted to say that when I heard about people suddenly finding material in their machines that they had not requested, that was obligatory, and to boot couldn't be erased, I felt as though I'd been hit. And it seems to me that that is at the very least breaking and entering. What do you think?
That's an interesting theory, yeah. I mean, the machine belongs to you. How you want it to work is up to you. So if somebody makes a decision and says, no, you will have this now, it's like junk mail coming into your home and basically taking up space, like valuable space in your house that you have reserved for something else. You know,
if you don't open your door and haven't even been told that it's coming in through the transom.
Uh-huh.
Sort of like somebody putting bowls of old porridge in your bookshelf or something. I'm sure that can't be legal.
Well, that's a good question. You know, it's something we have to ask ourselves. Is this legal? Is this right? Should this be supported by us continuing to buy products like this?
No.
I see the day. I see the day when infomercials are downloaded onto everybody's, you know, TiVo that they've already paid for. And, you know, as a result, something they do want to tape there isn't enough room for because the advertisement comes first. And that's the kind of thing that you have to be aware of, you know?
Then it'd be just time to shoot all the electromechanical machines because that's
mm-hmm.
Yes. Anyway, thanks very much.
All right.
Good night.
Thanks. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Eric Williams.
All right.
Yes.
Well, nice to get spam on the on the radio show. Okay, good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening.
What's on your mind?
I recently received a copy of a letter, of an email, and the reply to it said, as a result of excessive volume from your website, your computer has been infected with a virus. This was addressed to the person who sent the letter, not to me. But do you know anything about this sort of prank? And is it real? Can anyone do anything about it?
Well, people send all kinds of email that says you have just done something or gotten something that's completely untrue. What you have to do is look at where the letter came from, look at any supporting facts that might back it up, and generally I would look at the thing with a grain of salt because... viruses are sent through email, but only if you're foolish enough to open attachments through programs like Outlook will they affect you in any way. The most you'll have to worry about is just, you know, the garbage of spam being constantly sent to you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so these people shouldn't have anything to worry about.
I would imagine not, unless, you know, I think taking it too seriously is probably probably not the best thing to do.
Yeah, I had a hunch.
Yeah.
Well... thank you for confirming it.
All right.
Great show. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night.
Of course, I can't guarantee that, you know. Maybe there is a virus there. I don't know, you know. But
you can get antivirus software.
Yeah.
Do all that.
But it's a lot of, you know, a lot of updating that constantly has to be done. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yo.
Speak up. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Look.
Hello?
There's like two of us to talk. Oh, yeah.
Are you addressing a crowd in some, like, capital city someplace?
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's what it sounds like.
Okay, straight now.
All right.
Ex-employee from one of the major networks in New York's TV networks. He sent out a signal prior to commercials.
They sent. Why would they do that? I mean, that just makes it so simple for people to skip the commercials.
Well, that wasn't the original intent. The original intent was to let downline stations who may be running a different commercial in that time slot know that the network is doing a feed. And they sometimes then insert their own.
So is that only for nationally broadcast commercials?
I would think it's... I know it's national because that's what we were doing. We have... as an example, we had five different... TV ads going down the line, all simultaneously, and different stations would take different feeds.
Right.
So it's a lot more complex.
See, I was suspecting maybe it was something like the fade to black, and then you know, the subsequent fade to blacks from other commercials until it goes back to a program again. I was thinking it was something logical like that.
In fact, the whole commercial issue was all computer controlled.
Mm-hmm.
It's all planned, all operated, and the machines fire off and give the next cart. Mm-hmm. If the cart doesn't start within a few seconds, a backup cart with the same program fires off.
They still use carts?
Well, it's the ad agencies.
Mm-hmm.
The ad agencies have been very comfortable using their carts.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're, in essence, in control.
By carts, we mean tape cartridges.
Tape cartridges,
that,
right.
Used to be used for radio stations, for commercials, and even for songs.
Except these are video cartridges.
Right.
They're much thicker and with a big one-inch hole in the center.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little more complex.
And, sir, you currently work for a major network, you said?
I'm retired.
Oh, you're retired, okay.
I can't even say the network, I guess.
Well, how long has it been since you've been inside a network room? I mean, things might have changed.
About 4 years.
Yeah, it's quite possible things have changed a lot in 4 years.
Well, if it was worth it to them that the ad agency and the network mm-hmm. decides that, yes, they can swap over, they will. They may go to a smaller cartridge.
Uh-huh.
But they need some stuff that they can get very tight control on.
The one thing I miss is the announcer. Remember they used to have announcers on TV? Like,
well,
human beings?
We had, at this network, we had an announcer sitting in the booth all the time.
Uh-huh.
And in the event we went down, you know, fit the black or whatever it was, and they can get audio through, audio would go.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't as current, I think, and worried anymore as it was. They did do it.
Yeah, it's all pre-programmed now and perfect. And you never hear any mistakes. You know, you never see anybody flub a line because it's all practiced and pre-recorded. And it's sad, you know. I remember, you know, as a kid growing up and watching local TV stations, and each one would have their own announcer that would, you know, say things during credits, which used to have credits, too, which was another mm-hmm. thing that seems to be going
right.
away. It just had a more human feel to it, you know. And I pity people today who never experienced that.
Well, let's put it this way. When all this stuff that was going on, I'm talking about, let's say, 10 years ago, way before that, the complexity of the voice channels we had to have up for coordination purposes, especially, you know, like prepping a football game. The game is being played, let's say, in Cincinnati. The billboard, you know, that's put up, maybe in New York, and maybe somebody talking is in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all done, you know, with voice coordination. We have a lot of voice lines up. I'm not sure what they're doing now. Maybe they can do it with some computer cues, but the countdowns used to, you know, the voice activated. We knew when something was going to go, and then it would roll. So you're right. There may be better technology. The only better one that I know is that the remote control cameras.
Mm-hmm. Better technology from a technical point of view, but I don't think from necessarily a human point of view. Anyway, thanks very much for the call. And
okay, you're welcome.
All right, take care.
All right.
212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air. Yes, it's you. Okay, well, you got to move a lot faster than that. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Cover the whole day.
I wonder where you're calling from.
New York.
Okay. Well, then I guess that all applies.
Yes. Two things. Number one, I was happy to meet you the other day when we did when we came back and actually said hello to the volunteers at the marathon.
Oh, well, thanks for coming in, and thanks for volunteering.
Hey, you know, I try to do it every time. And also, I want you to repeat the website for volunteers for H2K2 so that I can log on, volunteer my time for that as well.
Okay, what's an email address? It's volunteers@h2k2.net.
I will do that. And I think with the announcement that they were looking for famous hackers, if they're willing to pay some money, I think that you should forward that to Kevin and see if they'll he would actually agree to participate, because I think he could use the money.
Well, I don't remember anybody saying we're looking for famous hackers. I think we're looking for people that are just sincere.
Well, if he gets thrown in jail.
Well, yeah, but
no, that makes him a rebel.
That's true.
Send him a group picture from H2K2.
Well, I think you're thinking of the ad we read, right? For the
yes.
for the Levi's ad. Okay, well that's not us, obviously. but we as far as Kevin goes, that's an interesting idea, having Kevin pose for a jeans ad.
You might as well take advantage of notoriety, because he's either going to control it or it's going to control him.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, in today's society, honesty and good judgment fall by the wayside in the interest of sensationalism. You know, Kevin's crimes are a pale between. For Kenneth Lay, but Kenneth Lay still has a better reputation than Kevin. Why? I have no idea.
Well, we won't be seeing him in any jeans ads either. So,
ain't that the truth?
Yeah. All right, thanks for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
You know, They've taken all our words.
What do you mean?
Rebel used to be a good thing, and now Levi's has it.
Yeah, you know, and Revolution, that's a sneaker ad.
Right.
When did that happen, you know? It's, I just got come up with new words, I guess. But yeah, everything turns into a product around here, everything. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling about the thing with TiVo and about some phone system stuff.
Okay.
On the TiVo thing, I believe there's a show maybe once a month that'll come on some network. I'm not sure what channel it is, but I've seen it. It said like TiVo in one corner, and in the other corner it looked like there was just static.
Uh-huh.
But I'd have to assume that was some sort of data. And my guess is that is like maybe a control message or like an update and schedule that the TiVo downloads.
Uh-huh.
I don't know for sure, but I've seen that on there.
I do know. I catch my TiVo doing this late at night, doing some sort of update. It takes a long time. It takes about 20 minutes to get the whole update. But I was actually, and this is kind of weird, I was recording something from TiVo to VCR, and all of a sudden, while I'm recording this, which is kind of obnoxious because instead of my program, I got this, the whole screen blanks out, and I see something saying, booting up, please hold on, and then updating the database. This will take a long time. And that lasted for about an hour. And it turns out that's new software that was being downloaded sort of mandatorily, but it got in the way of what I was trying to tape, which I found to be rather obnoxious. And I don't see any difference. Obviously, something is in there now that wasn't there before.
Well, what would you do if it was like Microsoft software and all of a sudden you get the blue screen of death there on your video?
Yeah. Well, Ultimate TV is the Microsoft version of what TiVo does, and I'm not sure if there is a blue screen of death on those things.
I'd be tempted to record it just to see.
Uh-huh. Well, if anyone out there has experience with that, we'd like to know about those as well. As far as I know, TiVo runs Linux, though.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of interesting.
The phone system at 2600, how do you guys run that?
We don't have one. We don't have a phone. We have a phone that really doesn't do anything right now. We're looking to get a better system.
Okay.
We're in the process of setting that up, but since we're in the process of setting up so many other things at the same time, it kind of falls by the wayside. You're best off contacting us by email.
Oh, okay. I just kind of been interested in how to set up something like that.
Well, I wouldn't if I were you, because
get a phone line, hook up an answering machine, and don't answer it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we do.
One thing I'd recommend looking at, I saw some software called Call Attendant Pro.
Uh-huh.
It didn't have like touch tone recognition, which is one thing I wanted to have. I mean, it could recognize them, but you couldn't do any weird tricks with it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to be able to like play them and get numbers read back, but I don't think it does that.
That's kind of, you talk about the feature we have on our Voice BDS. That's something that you kind of have to write yourself in whatever application it is. I think that was written in C or something. I don't think you'll find anything that will readily read back those numbers to you. It's a good feature to have, definitely. And I'd like to be able to have that for a number of different frequencies.
Okay. Well, I'll let you get back to the other callers.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, yes. The other day, this past Sunday, that movie Enemy State had came on. I hadn't watched it, and it's been a while. And
wait, what?
Enemy, I'm sorry.
Enemy of the State, okay.
Enemy of the State, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And, you know, it just reminded me of what the NSA has, the capability to tap all the fax, email, you know, mobile. And what I think my professor, because I'm presently taking some computer class, was telling me how he met with some bigwig over at Microsoft that came to New York, and that I think it's called Carnivore.
Mm-hmm.
That the government stole that from Bill Gates. Now, I don't know. But that's what I'm just telling you. That's what you know, he was telling me that you know, that the guy from Microsoft was saying, but. In any event, it just seems to me that if NSA is able to do this, how is it not possible that they don't, they couldn't have known Osama bin Laden was going to attack, you know, the World Trade Center, all these terrorists, and, you know, whatever is out there. You know,
well, yes, assuming people use email to plan such things in the first place.
Well, email, but then you have the phones and the fax, and, you know. I just don't buy.
Well, do you want a society where people know everything that's going to be planned?
Of course not.
Yeah.
Of course not. But I think that, you know, the government knows a lot more than, you know, they are obviously want to, you know, to divulge to the public. I'm just, you know, just find it very interesting. You know, because, you know, I'm looking, even though a lot of sometimes you watch these movies, but you have satellites that can bring back images from way out there yonder, you know, Hubble scope, and yet, you know, we can't pinpoint where the drug is coming from. And, you know, I'm just, you know, these are the things I'm just trying to make sense. You understand?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting questions to ask. I suspect if there is more that they're not telling us, there's a reason they're not telling us, because they don't want us to know how much they're capable of actually doing. You know, that's that's always something that, you know, comes back to bite them in the end when too much of that information is revealed. That's why it's up to people like us to ask questions and figure things out when we're not told the truth.
But what do you think about that, about the government taking that... I think it's called carnivore again.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter to me who wrote it or who developed it. The fact is that it's being implemented, and that's what has to be fought. If they want to battle that in the court as to who actually, you know, wrote the thing, then, you know, that'll be an interesting thing to see. But but the fact is that, you know, privacy is something that is very much in danger, and we can fight this by, you know, using encryption a whole lot more. And detecting these things.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, because, you know, to surf the web, is there saying there's some kind of technology now with the cable boxes where they're able to, like, you know, kind of, like, watch what you do, you know?
Well, they can see what channel you're tuned to.
Right.
I've been on the phone with cable people where they tell me to tune to a certain station, and I misheard them, and I tuned to the wrong one. And they said, no, this station.
Wow.
That's kind of scary.
It is scary.
But you also have to ask yourself, do you really think they're going to sit around and wonder if you're, you know, watching
right.
Barney Miller at 2 in the morning?
Right, right.
You know?
I guess it all depends, you know, if you're a threat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you're a threat, if you're somebody that you watch, I guess your viewing habits would be something that would that would be interesting. But, you know, the same information can be gleaned from what films you rent at Blockbuster, and they keep track of that information, too.
Right, yeah. Wow, man, it's crazy. Oh.
It's nuts. It really is.
I thank you very much.
All right, thanks. All right. Thanks for calling, and I think that's going to just about do it for us here tonight. A lot of interesting things to discuss, to talk about, and the hours just seem to fly by.
Not when we have five of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the 5 hours dragged as much for all of us. But, it, you know, for those people that stayed the whole time.
Over 500,000 young people every weekend. A good night out means breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law. Breaking the law.
Well, we'll be back again next week with more Tales of Intrigue. Again, if you want to email us, our email address is OTH, which stands for Off the Hook. You know, it also stands for Other Than Honorable Discharge from the Army. I didn't know that. OTH at 2600.com is our email address. Send us any information that you have, news stories, questions. Things like that. And again, we'd like to see you take a vital part in the upcoming H2K2 conference. More information on that will be posted on www.h2k2.net. And, of course, we'll be talking about it at the upcoming meeting, which takes place next Friday. Not this Friday, but next Friday at the Citigroup Center in at 53rd Street and Lexington Avenue. So we'll see you there. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
Thursday, May 30th, from 7 to 9 p.m., Bob Law will host Night Talk live from the Abyssinian Baptist Church, located at 132 West 138th Street between Malcolm X and Adam Clayton Power Jr. Boulevards in Manhattan. Clear the Air will be the theme of this discussion of important issues confronting the African-American community, including reparations and political formations. The program will begin promptly at 7 p.m. and will be broadcast live on WBAI. That's Bob Law and Night Talk, live from the Abyssinian Baptist Church, Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m., and also heard over listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM.